This is a TechWeb Internet Insider Profile. I'm Senior Editor Paul Schindler.
Because although Steve Case is not telling you this, deep down you suspect he probably has a notion of what the truth is. And the truth is, nobody knows.
Kara Swisher is the Wall Street Journal's Silicon Valley reporter. She's written AOL.com, an independent account of how a small company in the unlikely location of the Washington suburbs beat the odds and became the online giant it is today. Swisher covered America Online and the Internet for the business section of the Washington Post from 1994 to 1997. Considering the competition it's faced, AOL's position as an online powerhouse probably needs a great deal of explaining. I interviewed Swisher in our San Francisco studio. She discussed the week when AOL was nearly sold out, first to Paul Allen and then to Bill Gates, and her theories on why AOL has survived in a highly competitive market. The interview began with Swisher reading from the conclusion of her book.
When people ask me why or how I did it, it's like asking a basketball player, "Why do you play basketball?" says Case, who would doubtless prefer to keep such thoughts of personal motivation mostly to himself, probably because you want to be the best. He was simply curious about the online world, he finally volunteered, and wanted to play a defining role in making it become a real mass medium. "So I never did mind the focus on my imminent demise because the facts are on my side," said Case. "And the fact is that all the dust is settled and I am still standing, that pretty much says it all." But Case also said he fears everyone and still remains the most paranoid person at AOL. "I learn a lot from history because no one thought much of AOL and here we are," he said. "So I exaggerate the risks and diminish the advantages. And for the future, we'll see, won't we?" said Case in a terse and enigmatic way that leaves listeners wondering whether he has some insight of what tomorrow will bring. Because although Steve Case is not telling you this, deep down you suspect he probably has a notion of what the truth is. And the truth is, nobody knows.
Thank you for reading from your book, AOL.com. Let's start with the title. Is that a fair book title for a book about AOL? After all, they were dragged screaming and kicking into the Internet.
Absolutely.
And so to name your book AOL.com seems to suggest that they had a little more prescience on this vector than they have.
That's the email address. It's not the web address. And it actually was at AOL.com. And the people at Random House felt that bookstore employees wouldn't be able to file it correctly. So initially, I wanted it to be at AOL.com, and they just felt like it would get lost or someone in Kansas wouldn't be able to locate it within the store. So they changed it. But it is, in fact, the email address, which millions and millions of people have.
At several points in the book, you describe moments when AOL could have sold out and ceased to exist as we know it, things that now, in retrospect, look less risky than they did at the time. And I'd like to ask you to briefly describe, let's say, two of them. And that was when they came close to selling out to Paul Allen, and also nearly contemporaneous meeting with Bill Gates. But let's start with Paul Allen.
Well, they wanted to be very Catholic in their associations in terms of being able to make a lot of different alliances with lots and lots of people, because they thought that was the way they would prevail. And Paul Allen had very specific ideas of what he wanted, including broadband access. And he wanted, basically, to make AOL the Internet, because this was pre-Internet. And he felt that AOL could become what later became the Internet and the web. And they felt as if they were, they had been struggling for so many years, and that the immediate future was, dial-up modem access. And they thought he was a little too pie in the sky. And he was trying to be very forceful with his vision, and they didn't share it, and they didn't feel as if even though he owned 25% of the company, which is quite a lot, they wanted nothing to do with him. The more serious thought was to link with Microsoft, and that made a lot more sense, because they were interested in creating an online service very similar to AOL, and so half the board wanted to do it, and half the board didn't.
You cite a meeting with Bill Gates. By the way, has anyone disputed the quotation you attribute to him?
Just Bill Gates. No one else.
But everyone else in the room heard it that way.
That's how I...
And what was that? What did he say?
I'm going to buy 20%. I could buy 20% of you. I could buy all of you, or I could just go in this business and bury you. I don't think he was threatened. I think it was a weird threat. I think he was actually discussing the state of the situation. I think it was true what he was saying. I don't think it was false, because most people felt that the minute Microsoft entered the market, it was over for AOL, because they were number four or five even. They were really not a powerhouse, and the fourth or fifth ranked player often drops out.
It does sound consistent with the known public persona of Bill Gates.
Right. He must say this to a lot. I think there's a million stories in Silicon Valley of someone from Microsoft sort of saying, you know, we're going to just kill you. Now, in this area, in software, I think I'd be a lot more nervous. In this area, I think he saw it as software and didn't perceive it as something that was more of a service and a community thing. And that's where he had his great fault.
In the book Burn Rate, AOL is characterized pretty clearly as a dysfunctional organization at several points. In particular, he talks about revolving door management and how every time he went back for a meeting, it was a different group of people. Is that a fair characterization of AOL?
Yeah, I think from Michael's point of view, absolutely. You know, it was organized chaos at AOL, and it still is in many ways. It's a little more organized than it used to be. But I think from Michael's perspective, actually, we were talking, we think the books complement each other really nicely. He actually finished my book, and he said, you know, I actually realize I kind of like these guys a lot more than I used to. But I think from his perspective, he had a bad experience with them and it didn't work out. And so these are the memories he carries with him. I think if you were a content provider or someone like that, you might find AOL very frustrating. I had a whole section about content providers, but I felt readers, you know, it's like if you picked apart the Wall Street Journal's internal politics, it would probably be just as dysfunctional, or any organization or CMP or whatever. You know, Michael's writing from the perspective of a disgruntled and unhappy. I say it's one side of a divorce. You know, it certainly is true to him, and it is true, really, in his experience. I love that book. It made me laugh out loud.
Why are they unkillable? Why are they the cockroach of cyberspace?
Yeah, I call them the digital Dracula, the online Lazarus, all those things. Because, you know, one of the things that the press does and what the trade does and the digitality does is they assume because they don't like it that consumers, they never think of consumers. And technology companies are really lax in their consideration of consumers. Your Windows system crashes all the time. Your software has glitches. You know, you wouldn't put up with this in any other medium at all, I don't think. I mean, your television not working properly, you turn it on, it works. And I think that one of the things, what I was fascinated with is the press was either incredibly negative or incredibly positive on AOL. I remember a cover of Business Week where Steve was lying on a pile of discs and it said Steve Case's Universe or something. And it was right before a series of mishaps that would have just killed off anybody. So I think nobody wanted to look at this as sort of, you know, a much more complex story, that they weren't just good, they weren't just bad, they were struggling to create something. The second thing is that the vast majority of users do not want to have a complex technology solution for them. They want something very simple, they want something very easy, they want to use email and they want to chat, and they want to either communicate with each other or send pictures, but it's mostly centered around communications, and AOL was utterly dedicated to that in a way that other people weren't. You know, push, who cares, you know what I mean? You know, I remember that. You know, why would you? You know, people just don't want to use technology in the ways that people in Silicon Valley do. You know, here they can build their own computers. They, you know, AOL's not elegant. Well, you know, it doesn't matter for most people. They really just want to send email for the most part, and just have, you know, feel safe within, you know, the technology and the web. Even though it's getting easier, and it is getting easier by the day, is still a pain in the neck to use, as far as I'm concerned. You know. It'll get better over time, but it's still not as easy as AOL, and that's really pretty much, you know, it's easy to install, it's easy to use, it's easy to understand. A very average person can use it without having to, like, understand what a WinSock is. I remember WinSock jumped up on my computer. I was like, what the heck is that? You know, and I think that most people just want to use the technology and ignore it completely, pretty much.
All right. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to a TechWeb Internet audio report. Thanks for listening.